welcome to the Human Condition Podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher. Catastrophic, unprecedented, traumatic, unpredictable, epidemic, pandemic. These are now everyday words that seem to be defining life in Australia, in our world. And while there's no doubting the scale of our bushfires, drought, storms, and the coronavirus, our human response has ranged from the quite bizarre obsession with buying up loads of toilet paper to facing very real questions of life and death, perhaps for the first time, to the truly uplifting, helping hand that we've been offering to those doing it tough. I'm fascinated by what it's all doing to us, what it says about us, why we're acting as we are, and where's it leading? Lynn Worsley, clinical psychologist and founder and director of the Resilience Centre, has been doing a lot of thinking about all this and applying her wisdom and experience on the human condition to come up with some thought-provoking answers. She actually says this cascading series of events might also provide us with an opportunity. Lynn, it's wonderful to see you again.
Great to be here.
Good on you. So tell me what is happening in your view in the minds and the psyche of the people around us over these past few months and looking into the future.
Okay, firstly, Lee, there's what psychologists call an availability bias. Mm-hmm. That means that we're more likely to give weight to events we can immediately recall. And to help with this recall, there's been a non-stop media cycle around the bushfires, about air quality, floods, and now the corona outbreak.
It's been quite a few months, yes.
It's been quite a few months. Yeah. So the media cycle has used emotive words, which we're attracted to, by the way.
Yes.
You know, such as traumatic, unpredictable, and then potential global epidemic. These are really emotive words.
Because I know, coming from media, they're the words that keep us watching.
We tune into
media,
them.
Yes.
So it heightens our concerns and reinforces our concerns. So people become more hypervigilant, and that leads them to starting to notice more things that are negative. They're hearing more, they're reading more, and then they're interpreting information in a much more threatening way.
So how does this availability bias fit in? Okay, so we're giving weight to events we can immediately recall. So what?
The availability bias basically puts more information there that it feeds into a negativity bias.
Okay.
It dominates our thoughts and our conversations and our responses. It becomes the norm of how we speak.
Yeah.
Another aspect that's happening to us is that there's a continued exposure to uncontrollable events. We've had one after the other in Australia.
Yes.
And normally a healthy response to that is to find some sort of control. That's normal. We try and control things we can't control. So even if it's watching the news, we feel like we're in control of it.
Yeah.
Sort of a strange thinking. Even reading media updates and buying toilet paper.
I still don't understand that. Anyhow.
That makes us feel like we're in control. You know, as humans, we feel like we need to control. And
of
this
course.
Is in a form of finding more information. Even like you, if you look at the weather, you feel like you've got control over the weather.
Yeah.
Like it's a strange sort of thinking. So even looking at the fire updates and keeping on that little app that we were looking at, well, that basically makes us feel like we're in control of the fires.
Yeah.
So the same thing with the coronavirus. We feel like we're in control of it by looking at it all the time. But that also adds to the fact that we're exposed to uncontrollable events. By trying to control it, we're actually more exposed to the uncontrollable
events.
And
we're drawn more and more to finding out more and more. I find myself, even a tragic like me, I'm listening to more and more news bulletins with this radar up.
Yeah. And the thing is, though, this plan that we have in order to control, to make us feel a little bit better, creates a bit of a dependency on the media, which, of course, has a negativity bias.
Yes, of course.
To help us to feel like we're in control. So we then end up in this sort of spiralling cycle of negativity that we tell ourselves we can't live without.
That's so true. And we're a bit of a herd, involved in a herd mentality.
Yes, yeah. And that's what we call group thinking.
Okay.
So with the herd mentality, the group thinking that occurs means that a lot of people are thinking and doing and talking about the same thing. Like, I can get in the lift here and you can have the same conversation that you've just had with somebody at home. They've had the same conversation with somebody at home and you're having the same conversation with a complete stranger. So essentially, we're starting to herd. We're pulling together.
Is that about not so much control, but about belonging?
It's about belonging, but evolutionists would say this is how you spread bacteria.
Oh, tell me more.
Evolutionists would say this is how survival of the fittest occurred. Herds occurred, but also the viruses go in herds as well. So it's sort of like counterproductive in terms of stopping the spread of bacteria. But it also is a bit of this group thinking.
Yes.
Creates a group norm. That means that the panic then becomes a norm. Everybody's panicking. So somehow this group thinking panic feels like, hey, because everyone's doing it.
See, this is not known much by this kind of generation or these generations in recent times, unlike people who went through world wars, for
instance.
Well,
yeah, during the war times, there were whole countries of people doing things that they wouldn't normally do in peacetime.
Yes.
Such as alienating whole groups of people or leaving people on the side of the road that were suffering.
It's inexplicable now.
Or finding groups of people to blame. So it explains some of the reactions that we have when we go to the shops and we see people loading up the toilet paper and the rice and whatever else they're hoarding. We tell each other stories about the silly things that the other people are doing, but secretly we go and buy extra toilet paper and an extra bag of rice.
Yes.
Just in case.
Just in case.
So the group fear also explains some of the racism that we're hearing about. It's completely unfounded and totally amoral, and it's generated by fear.
And kind of becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Absolutely.
The more this happens, the more this happens.
Absolutely. So with a self-fulfilling prophecy, it's like how we talk about our problems and what we do, then we establish a direction. We're all focusing on the problem, we're focusing on the catastrophe, and we set up the fear has its own energy.
It's life.
With a self-fulfilling prophecy, it's been proven over and over again, if we focus on the fears, we change our behaviour in reaction to our fears, and inevitably we end up with our fears. So, for example, we think we'll run out of toilet paper, so we buy up, and guess what? We run out of toilet paper.
Yes.
So if we attend to the negativity bias in the media, we're actually setting up a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So do we put our head in the sand and don't listen to the media or turn the telly on?
Oh, I think we can do something different.
Yeah, good.
If we're fearing the worst, we will make the worst happen. Mm. In the coronavirus case, it may have low mortality rates compared to flu, suicide rates, heart conditions, cancer. However, with the hypervigilance and rising panic, our group reactions alone, not the virus, but our group reactions alone can cause a global economic crisis.
It's not to underestimate the seriousness of something like this.
No, but we need to keep it in perspective.
Okay. I think this is fascinating. What's the alternative then? So what would you do other than all this?
Okay. So let's draw on the studies and the reports of individuals and large groups of people who are seen as resilient. They have subtle, but they have much more helpful thoughts and reactions that made a difference to both their survival and their mental health.
Okay.
I'd like to add, there were people during those war times and catastrophes that have happened in the past that weren't resilient. So we're just looking at the people who are resilient.
Okay. So what do they do then?
Firstly, one of the most important things is that they appear to stay optimistic. I'm not talking about positive.
Okay.
I'm talking about optimistic. So let's have a look at the thinking of optimism in the case of when things aren't going well. So when someone is optimistic during a disaster, they see the disaster as temporary. Like they say, it won't last long, or it will be over soon, or it will be over.
And that will be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Secondly, they say it's caused by a specific difficulty that can be addressed rather than a global difficulty that can't be addressed. The third one is that they see it's because of other factors, not because of them. They're not contagious. They're not contaminated. They're not the problem. Mm. It's more that there are other factors out there that are causing this to happen.
So that's probably going to result in a fair few different practical outworkings.
Absolutely.
In how we behave.
So when people think like this, their actions are quite vastly different. It means instead of isolating themselves and seeing everyone as a threat, they tend to gather with others. And they gather with others around other stories, hopeful stories. They might share resources, like sharing books or having shared libraries on the streets. They might share toilet paper. Well, I mean, clean toilet paper, I'm assuming. But, you know, they'll share their resources that they have built up. They might see that somebody's short of something.
And that brings out really good things in a crisis.
It certainly does.
You see it in floods, famine, bushfires, whatever.
We saw it in the bushfires.
Community.
We saw so many beautiful stories.
Yes.
The people would pool together. They would pick up the old lady across the street and take her down to the beach where it was safe. That's the sort of stuff that was happening. And that's what connecting to care for each other with an optimistic head or thinking pattern in the midst of crisis, that's what happens.
Yeah.
We also connect to protect each other. So we form gangs to protect ourselves. We might reach out for other people who are also in distress. We also educate ourselves and become informed, but not necessarily educate ourselves in terms of the negativity bias.
No. So you wouldn't necessarily go to the media for that?
No. And you wouldn't necessarily just go Google what's happening. You would be going for, let's have a little look at how viruses are spread and how do we contain things and how do we make sure that our houses are safe during a bushfire season. So the other thing is that we would keep routine, or people who are resilient in these situations, they keep a routine and they have predictable and normal daily living.
Mm.
They don't change too much of their living, but they just put some things in place to keep that routine going.
Okay.
And that's what keeps us sane.
Yes.
I always like the best case scenario thinking. Okay. And best case scenario in the worst case. So if you have a worst case happening, what would the best case scenario be in this situation?
Is that putting my head in the sand?
Is no, that not being it's real? Mike saying there's a fire coming. What is the best case scenario in this? The best case scenario is that we're able to contain as much as we can and we have everybody going to safety with our photo albums.
Yes, okay.
You know, it's like, oh, that's the plan. That's the best case scenario in the worst case. If my house burns down, what is the best case scenario that we're all safe? So it's that sense of planning for that and how do we actually nut down to the things that we value most and hold on to those and move into a place that those are treasured. Mm. Resilient people look for opportunities in the midst of crisis, not a threat. So that opportunity thinking is something I'd really like to pick up on. They also see that there's a purpose in the situation. The purpose might be for a higher order of thinking, or the purpose might be that, you know, we need to connect or we need to clear our stuff.
Yeah.
And we certainly have that happen when we have a bushfire.
You bet. Yes.
Optimistic people in dire circumstances, they actually take useful action. They think quicker. They're more realistic. They think quicker on their feet because they choose what matters most.
So here are two people. One is positive, one is optimistic. Explain to me the difference between the thinking of those two individuals.
Someone who's just positive can be looking for positive things, like there's a silver lining in the cloud here, or, you know, oh, it's such a nice day, I'm going to enjoy the day even though my house is burning
there's
down.
There's a bushfire raging around.
Yeah, that's right.
Or my whole family is in isolation and in hospital.
Yes, so that's just sort of blindly thinking positively. You can actually think negatively and be optimistic.
Mm.
So the three main thinkings of someone who's optimistic, regardless of whether they're positive or negative, is that when something bad happens, it's temporary.
Okay, if I'm told to isolate or quarantine or I'm on the way to hospital or in hospital, how's this going to work out there?
Okay.
What am I going to think, do then?
Okay, first of all, there is the whole notion of thinking, where is an opportunity and not a threat? So I'm going to have to isolate. The first thing you can think of is that it's actually going to be temporary.
Yes.
It might be only 14 days.
Yep.
I'm having to isolate. So what am I going to do? I need to connect. I know that resilient people connect. So I'm going to set up an online connected community. I'm going to send out jokes, funny jokes. We're really good at laughing when we're down.
It's memes.
Australian.
Yep.
I'd also think about it as an opportunity to spend with my family. And we had this discussion around the table last night.
Hmm.
What are we going to do if one of us goes down? Because all of us are going to have to go down. It's like, sweet. Well, we get the board.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Yes, we'll get the board games out.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we've got a good deck of cards. Make sure we've kept up to date with that 500 pack because there's always something missing. We'd also think about maybe I could update my skills. I do need to do that course. And I've always wanted to learn that, you know, design course and perhaps work out how I'm going to update my website. I need to do that. So what about I do a course or two? And that means when I come back to work, I'll be much more useful.
I've got my plan already. I'm going to isolate myself in my office, which has a bed. It's got all my guitars, my keyboard, my drum kit, my computer.
You're going to practice.
Yeah, I'll be hot, baby.
You'll be a gun. You'll have a concert when you come out of that.
That's right. So it's the Corona concert.
And I think that that's the opportunity, not a threat. It's also, like, you know, one of the discussions with the colleagues here at the Resilience Centre was that, you know what? What if we see a change in our families that we see? What if the families that we see have more connections, not just at school holiday time? What if those families are watching movies together and cooking popcorn together and sharing stories and playing board games and there's a change in the dynamics between them?
It's really different from week to week.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
And that's where we start thinking, okay, it's an opportunity.
I'm stuck here, but it's an opportunity.
You know, one of the other things is that, you know, you can have online book clubs.
Yep.
You also can share books if you just wipe them clean and send them to the next person around the street. You can have a predictable and routine plan in your day.
That's probably really important.
That's what people who are resilient during wartime did. They had their predictable routines and they felt like life was going on and they're able to put one step in front of the other. And that actually helps healing. It helps healing, we know, when people are physically unwell, if they're getting out of bed, they're sitting in the sun, they have a time when they eat meals at certain times of the day rather than just lying in bed all day.
So in the meantime, if we're not going to quarantine, what can the rest of us do then?
If we've got friends or colleagues who are having to quarantine at home and we can't work with them, or there are people that we know in our neighbourhood who are in quarantine, we need to see that it's a temporary situation.
Yeah.
And so our conversations with them, and I'm hoping that we're still having conversations with them. We're not quarantining them online either.
Again, it will likely bring out the best in us.
It could absolutely bring out the best of us. But it's conversations like, when this is all over, we will. Not wait, oh, don't worry, it'll be over soon. It's true, it will be over soon. But what about thinking about what we will be doing when it's over? How will we be better?
Kind of a bucket list.
Yeah. And look for signs of it getting better. And looking ahead, in Australia, we have the absolute opportunity to see other countries, how they're dealing with it, who are ahead of us. And so we have that opportunity to see what are some of the good things that they did and what are some of the benefits that they made.
There's been a lot to learn.
Yeah. We can also start sharing jokes.
You know, you're really into this, aren't you?
I love the jokes. I've worked in palliative care. I've worked in situations where people are really, really sad. And they've had friends who send them cartoons. And it's hysterical.
Yep, great.
It's like, it's so Australian.
Yep.
So it's perfect to be able to send somebody in quarantine, hey, I just saw this, thought you'd like it. Reaching out to people in quarantine. We have to find new pathways. I like the idea of a quarantine gift pack. You've got someone in your office, they've had to quarantine because someone at the school's been shut and they've got a child that they've connected with who's got the virus. Okay, so what we're going to do, that person's staying at home, make a quarantine pack.
Leave it on the front door.
Leave it on the front door. Yeah. Pack of cards, box of fresh veggies, a joke book.
Of course.
And maybe even a little list on the toilet paper roll of all the things that you can do while you're in quarantine, which everyone in the office could sign. You know, that would be fun.
I mean, they get a real sense of not being so alone. Actually, somebody cares.
Yeah. But, of course, telling people that they're loved, that they're missed, that they're cared for. We always have this sense, if I'm not there, then they'll find out they don't need me. And that's awful. Which makes everyone have that FOMO. Oh, I've got to be there.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? This is the opposite to FOMO. We are going to be missing out, but we're actually going to make it into an opportunity and not a threat. Link up a WhatsApp group. Share positive stories.
Our online world is an absolute gift in these circumstances.
Yes.
Imagine 20, 30 years ago.
Well, yeah, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they did it well too.
Yeah.
50 years ago, 60 years ago,
yes.
In the war, they did it well for those who were stuck. But what we can do is that we can set up a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Which is kind of where we started.
Yes. If we can set up a self-fulfilling prophecy, then we need to start thinking about what is this opportunity for us Australians? How can Australians shine in this? How can we upskill our caring skills? How can we increase our tolerance for each other? How can we care for people so that we become better people as a nation? What if this is our chance to shine?
That'd be good.
That would be good. What would our conversation be in the lift coming up to work? How cool would it be if we had opportunity conversations versus catastrophic conversations?
Our conversations always leave me in a better space, even in the midst of all this. I think it's such wisdom. Thank you so much indeed for sharing it, Lynn.
Thanks, Lee.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. Head to the Resilience Centre website for an inspiring range of our other podcasts and so many great resources. www.theresiliencecentre.com.au